So that's the vision.
Very optimistic note to me. Perhaps we'll stop that part. Thank you very much, Marianne. Appreciate your time doing that. Alan had some slides before from that previous discussion, but we couldn't get them running, so I thought we'd just come back and have a chance to look at that, and then from there we'll then work out what kind of discussion we want to do next. So.
Yeah, just to preface a couple of things. One, I've kind of come from a project that is actually using learning design rather than doing learning design. We have what's called a Centre of Excellence in Teaching and Learning, which the whole objective was to try and get staff to be more student-focused in how they taught. And the problem we had was, how do you measure how they've changed if they can't articulate how they're teaching previously? And we had a big problem. We were looking at rubrics and various other things. So we actually looked around to try and get some learning design elements that would maybe help them explain what they're actually doing. And we actually came across a couple of things that just at the right time. We basically combined the 8LEM event model, which came out of a group up in Belgium, and we also combined it with Sue Bennett was looking at some closed lists of verbs at the same time. So we kind of thought that was quite good, because the 8LEM model gives a very conversational approach, because it says the teacher's doing this and the learner's doing that. And that was the kind of thing. We were trying to work out how are teachers teaching. Not what are they teaching, but how are they socially interacting with the students. But it gave a way of breaking down the type of activities, but adding some verbs that when you're actually doing this with the students, what is your role and what's the student's role? We saw that as an opportunity of very simply capturing some rich information. Bronya, I think, might have touched on these things yesterday. So what I want to focus on, how we've kind of been using this approach with some students. First thing we did is when we tested this with staff, they actually said that having played around with these things, they start to see much more what they were doing with the learners and what the learners were actually doing arising from their teaching styles. They also kind of felt that they had more confidence explaining to the students what they were asking them to do, because they tended to be very traditional. I'm teaching this. And they actually started to see that what they were doing was slightly more structured, because I think most teaching is quite implicit. They kind of do things, and sometimes it's so complicated they don't realize what they're doing. But we did some evaluation with some learners, and the learners actually were very comfortable with the 8LEM model as well, and very comfortable with the verbs. But the group that we actually did the initial sample with were some nursing students that had done some case studies. And what they actually said was, all this information about what the staff thought we should be doing, had we known that, we would have actually been able to do the task better, because it was the first time we were doing case studies. So this is a typical situation of how we would construct up stuff with staff. For a learning activity, they would tend to have some quite well-defined objectives that they want to see through. And what we have is some two-sided flashcards with the learning events on one side and the events plus verbs on the other side. We sit down with the facilitator through with a member of staff, start to structure out some high-level framework to it, you know, breaking down to the learning events. Once they're quite comfortable with that, then start to turn the cards over and start to drill down to what do the teachers see as their role in this interaction and what do they see as the learner's role. But then push it a bit more and, okay, what are the key elements of the learner's side of things, and what kind of prompts can they give to the learner in what they mean by, what do you mean by refine, what do you mean by explore? And then start to link onto that tools and resources, and how does this link to the assessment criteria? Now, we did some studies with quite a big group of first year marketing students who were asked to do portfolios, which are always complicated for year one students to do. And just before I go on, that is a crib sheet from a 45-minute session which included introduction to how to use the model. So this whole social interaction model captures an awful lot of rich interaction with very little effort, and you get the same amount of stuff with students. And that's the kind of grid that is the first artifact. I'll show you a second artifact, which is how we introduce it to the students, but that's a reference point that the students can kind of use, and we give to the students at the end of the activity. Okay, what we found was that's good to say that's what's going on, but when you're introducing a new activity to students, they get lost in the detail. So we actually said, okay, that's a PDF or a grid is quite good as a reflective reference point, but what you're trying to explain is a process. So we're basically taking a second layer of artifacts, which is actually an animated walkthrough, which takes the process through stage by stage, the same way the member of staff described it. But what I want to just kind of link quick through is, we'll go through this quite quickly. Okay, but we had about 100 students, and this is the kind of things that the students came back with. First of all, very high thing that, bear in mind, year ones doing portfolios is very, very complex because they're just not adapted to doing that. First of all, 92% said that having this information helped them complete the portfolio. It says there 82% said they didn't feel the need to contact the lecturer. The lecturer's feedback was that queries that tended to be the big problem with that teaching in previous years had all but disappeared. The students were focused on task, were very clear on what elements had to fit in. But more interesting was 7-8% were actually using the grid as a reference point to checklist down how they're doing things. And I think when we actually look at it, we gave the students a lot of statements and asked them to pick the top five, and you can start to see it's clarity of expectations and starting to give some scaffolding around. Free form comments were quite interesting as well. This is useful, it's starting to structure it, it's helping me to expect what's going on. But they were actually using it. They were starting to use it as a checklist to do the task. And also a checklist to reference against when they'd actually done the activity. So it was a checklist to do the task and also a checklist to check that they'd done it right. And the staff were pretty comment about it. What I just want to kind of touch on is, this is how we introduce things to the students before they did the task. It's exactly the same as the grid, but it's just a broken down process. So it starts off with the objective, gives the high level, and the students actually say they like to know what mode they need to be in. Are we predominantly listening here? Are we predominantly participating? The teacher can then discuss what they see their role is. The learners, this is the suggestion. Now, what's important is this is actually a conversation taking place between the teacher and the students. Now, with first years, what we're seeing is the students aren't very confident, so what we're trying to do is provide them with a framework. But as the years go on, there's much more opportunity for the students to start to define what they're doing and start to inform back to the staff how they feel they're going to do the task. But again, it's a case of this is what I think you'll be doing, but also giving some emphasis as to how these things should relate to the activity. And there it goes through. I think to put it in context, what we see this is quite good is allowing staff to step back and think about things quite fresh. So it's a very self-reflective approach. It's a very quick way of, this is how I think I'm doing. The cards and the approach is very helpful getting them to think about things. What it needs to do is plug into something that can take those things and move it forward. But I think more importantly, there's a chance for this to hook into things like IMS Learning Designs, which are information dense, extract key points out, so you can actually look at the high level stuff very cleanly without the other clutter around it, make some adaptations, and then feed back in again. But I think what we've certainly found is staff are very, very comfortable with doing this and are actually very comfortable with sharing this with students. And it's proven to be quite interesting. In terms of shareability, one thing that's come out of our institution is we actually have people like the library want to sit with academic staff to build out typical scenarios like seminars and start to construct additional columns to say, this is how information skills relate to a typical seminar, and this is how the library fit in with those information skills. Now that gives some templates of practice to kick around the institution, but those are discussion points around it. We have a lot of heads of school saying a big tension is, how do you explain to students and get staff to discuss the difference between a first year and a final year seminar? And this is quite a nice informal way to kind of bounce those ideas around. But it's very light in information. But we find it's very easy to share these things around because there's not that much information to pass about. And the models don't actually get into subject-specific content. The content's lurking somewhere else. And I think that's what I think there's a problem having too much information, because people don't have the time to dig in to see what's shareable. Anyway, I know it wasn't on the agenda, so I just wanted to keep things nice and clean.
Certainly, I found that really interesting, so thank you for sharing that. Do others have questions from you?
Hi, Alan. I mean, as you know, you sent me a big box of those because I was really struck. I mean, I liked the 8LEM model when I saw it quite a few years ago from Dominic and Co. through the Unfold project, and I think this has taken it on really nicely. I've used it in quite a few workshops now. Where I've compared use of Phoebe and the London Planner and got people playing with the 8LEM as well as Compendium LD. And the feedback has been very positive. I think the sheet's very useful. People really like the kind of hands-on feel of the flashcards. It's fun. You know, you can feel it, you can move them around. And as you say, in a 45-minute session, you can get a very long way with it. So, you know, I think it's really encouraging. And it is about kind of putting together all these different ways of doing things. And again, what strikes me with that is, one, it's visually appealing, it looks nice, it's real, and it's fun. And I think we need to put the fun back into design. I think that will get a lot further if we can make things more fun. So I think it's great stuff.
It's funny because we've had this tension because we're looking at putting an on-screen version of it, but the two barriers are, one, the cards are tactile and people impose their UI on it. I think once you put it on screen, people feel as if you're telling them what to do. The fact that staff can play around with them, use it in different ways. Some staff just flick around, what do I do? But also you kind of need a table to put them on. If there's a table, where are you going to do it? Sit next thing, you're having coffee and someone else is chatting with you. Putting it on screen, I think it helps prepare people to think about what they want to do upstream from it. I think staff like to play around with ideas first before they start to work on something.
I think a simple interactive online version of it would be really valuable because I've run out of the kind of coloured sheets now, for example. So you very quickly run out of stuff and I get quite possessive. I give out the cards in sessions. I go, can I have all the cards back, please? I'll check them. You know, like, I'm missing the experiment one or whatever. But I think an online version as well would complement it. I think there are pros and cons.
I think we're pushing ahead with that, but it is coming out with the right metaphor for it, because I think if you have too many tab screens, it starts to look like a... This is a design tool, where what it is to actually get you to reflect about what's going on and play around with some options and think about how am I doing things with my students before they actually hit the publish button.
I think it would be interesting to try it out on one of those flat tables, a computer-based version on one of the horizontal interaction surfaces that you can get. Let's maybe go for that instead of a web-based version.
But they don't like putting saucers on those. That's the only thing.
I think it's really good what you've done, but also it slightly depresses me because why isn't it common practice and why haven't we been doing it for years? It's like, it's not rocket science in a way. And I think what you're doing is brilliant, but it's another example of how much we don't really value teaching, that we don't do this kind of stuff all the time anyway. People just so rarely reflect on their teaching and think about what they're going to do. So I thought it was fantastic, but it kind of left me depressed.
we should
be doing it all the time.
That's not the first time I've heard that. We actually did a briefing session in one of our faculties, because this is actually embedded in our academic induction. The introduction of these cards, and we actually provide support to course validation teams and the like. But we had a kind of bit of a chat around about, a bit of feedback and everything else, and the conversation got around to the difference between two verbs and how it was affecting what we were doing, how staff perceived their role in supporting students was. And what quickly came around is this was a conversation they hadn't had, because they tended to be focused on curriculum development things, which were more centrally driven, policy driven, and that it allows staff to talk about how they teach and how they're interacting with students. And I think that is sometimes hard to find time to do. And if it just sparks that little bit, and it only takes 5 minutes to bang a couple of things down.
Thanks for your presentation. That was really interesting. I'm just wondering if you have linked your action verbs to Bloom's taxonomy or any other taxonomy of learning, because there's been a lot of work around that.
We're kind of trying to map out the whole taxonomies that we're kind of fitting in to see how, because obviously what we want to do is keep things nice and light. And I think what is nice about Sue's verbs are that there's no hierarchy to them. I think with some of Bloom's stuff, people feel that they're in final year, they should be pushing up the tree or whatever. So it's more of a description, but you know, I think what we want to make sure is we provide information that can consume out of other systems and feed back into them as well. So I have something over to do over the summer is to actually formalize our whole data schemas to make sure that we're comfortable where we are, but it sits relative to everything else.
Quickly respond to this.
Yeah.
I mean, I looked at it and thought that would be a fabulous teaching tool for teacher education students teaching pedagogy.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of work around verbs and action verbs and what happens, you know, when students do this. But it has to link to, you know, some form of taxonomy, I believe, to be able to be really useful. So I would love to take it up.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Firstly, before you go and slit your wrist, I was actually quite excited by that. It didn't depress me at all. Often I find that the simplest things come and they're really good. I teach a unit that looks at reflective teaching practice, and I find it really, really difficult for my students to grasp a lot of the concepts, and I can see how that would help them. So firstly, I want a box, I'll say that. And if you put it online, I could probably download it, so that would be okay too.
Our next version is basically we've done the card so that it can be printed out on the sheets. Now you just cut around. That's it. So that's our web 0.01 version, and that'll guide us over. But we are putting the grid online. So if you play around with the cards, you can put your grid on, hit the button, and you'll get the PDF grid and also the animation as well. So if you want to use those things in the classroom. So we're trying to build up the outputs first and then do the user data input second, because I think the cards are slightly more fun to use anyway.
But I thought it was interesting you made the distinction you didn't want it to be confused with a learning design tool, because I would have said in a lot of ways that's what I consider tools for a learning design tool, really. So you don't see that? You just...
Well, I think it's more we know people are doing learning design. But what we want to do is a very simple way to actually capture their practice, help them reflect on their practice, and let them kind of feel where they want to go on. I think sometimes if you're coming from a central department and you're there to advise, I think it's very good to be in a more passive role and helping them make their own judgments. And I think we've tried to steer away from saying, we're here to tell you how to teach. And I think the tool, the way it works, people do self-reflect a lot and think about things in the course teams. So we've tried to not say this is going to help you design your course, because a lot of course teams have actually used this to think about how their existing practice works, or face-to-face materials can sit into place. So it hasn't taken them any further down. I think it's more the practice element than the learning design. There is a slight distinction, but...
So you're looking at more as a visualization of what they're currently doing.
Yeah.
So they get it.
I just, for myself, I mean, I love this work too. I think it's, you know, great, and particularly the sort of working with our lecturers or teachers where they are and then helping them from there to reflect on what they're doing and go further. To me, you know, I mean, again, I think of my busy psychology lecturers, that might work for them.
Yep.
You know, some of the other approaches, they wouldn't give us the time. The bit for me, thinking from just a LAMS perspective, particularly the LAMS activity planner, is to me this is sort of the ideal front end model of, or it's an ideal front end model of reflection and so on, that once you've been through that, at the end of it, you're saying, okay, so having now thought about this, what I want to do is a sequence of activities like this that I would hope we could get LAMB somehow to then do that for you very quickly or rapidly if that was the way you chose to do it. I'm not saying that you should use LAMB having done that process. It's more that if doing this, I mean, I saw your table, and if it was that you're effectively going to do, in LAMB's terms, you know, a Q&A and then a forum and then a resource and then another forum, if that's what comes out of it, I'd love to see LAMB be usable in a way that could be a runnable sequence that could drop out of that process of reflection. Now, exactly how that happens and what wiring we might need to do technically would need looking at. And I'm not suggesting that that's what everyone should do out of this, yep. But it seems like you've already got so much structure at the, you know, when you've been through that process, you've got very often yep. to a structured design.